The headlines: Russian President Vladimir Putin says the Nordic expansion of the U.S.-led NATO military alliance towards its territory would demand a reaction from Moscow. The European Commission sharply cuts its Eurozone growth forecast for 2022, blaming skyrocketing energy prices. And Iran says it will take its complaint to the international bodies over the detention of one of its diplomats in Belgium. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The Russian president warns of a certain response if the U.S.-led NATO alliance deploys military infrastructure in Sweden and Finland.
Finland, Sweden, I would like to inform you, dear colleagues, that Russia has no problems with these states. An expansion to these countries does not pose a direct threat to us, to Russia. But the expansion of military infrastructure to these territories will certainly provoke our response.
Vladimir Putin was reacting to Helsinki and Stockholm's decisions to become members of the Western Military Alliance. Putin said Russia must look closely at what he called the alliance's plans to increase its global influence. On Sunday, Finland announced its intention to join NATO. Sweden's parliament is also debating the NATO accession after the country's ruling party backed the membership. Russia previously warned the two Nordic countries against joining the alliance, saying that could result in a nuclear buildup in the Baltic region. Political analyst Markus Papadopoulos says he sees no justifiable reason for Finland and Sweden to join the Western Military Alliance.
For nearly 80 years following the end of the Second World War, Finland maintained good, stable relations with both the Soviet Union and then the successor of the Soviet Union, the Russian Federation. Therefore, there is no reasonable argument for Finland, indeed, together with Sweden, to be admitted into the Western military bloc, because Russia poses no threat to Finland. Russia poses no threat to Sweden. Russia has embarked on a military campaign in Ukraine for purposes of national security, i.e. to prevent Ukraine from becoming a NATO member, and therefore to prevent American strategic missiles from being deployed in Ukraine, together with strategic American air bases being established in Ukraine. So there is no justifiable reason for the two Scandinavian countries to become NATO members.
Russia's war in Ukraine is taking a heavy toll on Europe's economy. The European Commission has now slashed its expectations for the Eurozone growth while increasing its inflation forecast for the monetary union. The EU's executive arm cut the annual growth for both the bloc and the Eurozone to 2.7, blaming soaring energy prices. The figure is down from the previous forecast of 4%. It also predicted that consumer prices in the euro area will go up by 6.1% year on year. That is near doubling of the previous forecast of 3.5%. The European Commission also hiked the expected inflation for the EU much higher than its earlier forecast. The Commission warned that the forecast is subject to high uncertainty and risks, noting that it could worsen further if Russia completely cuts off its oil and gas supplies to Europe. And Iran says it will take its complaint to the international bodies over the detention of one of its diplomats in Belgium.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has followed the case through both bilateral and special channels. The priority has been for the issue to be settled through this pass. But it's on our new agenda to refer the case to related international bodies or special human rights mechanisms, because unfortunately, Mr. Assad's immunity rights are being clearly violated.
Hatibzadeh says the arrest of Asadullah Asadi in Germany, his extradition to Belgium, his trial, as well as the verdict that he received, have all been illegal. Asadi was detained in Germany and sentenced to 20 years in prison in Belgium in 2018 after being accused of setting up a bomb attack against anti-Iran terrorist group MKO. Hatibzadeh says the arrest has set a new precedent in diplomatic law. He says that this is a clear violation of the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, which stipulates that diplomats are immune from prosecution in their host countries. And a convoy of around 70 oil tankers belonging to the U.S. military has reportedly crossed from Syria's Hasakah province into Iraq. The convoy is the latest attempt by the U.S. to smuggle Syrian crude from the illegally seized oil wells in the country's north. The tankers were reportedly accompanied by a number of trucks carrying military equipment and several armored vehicles. On Friday, another convoy of U.S. trucks was seen crossing into Iraq from the same area. U.S. troops and the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces are in control of most of the oil fields in the Syrian provinces of Hasakah and Deir ez-Zor. They have been regularly smuggling Syrian oil out of the country to sell it abroad. Damascus has repeatedly condemned the U.S. move as state piracy. Yemen's national airline operates its first commercial flight in years from the capital, Sana'a. The flight arrived in Sana'a from Jordan. Abdulatif Al-Washali was on the scene.
The first commercial flight has landed at Sana'a International Airport almost 7 years after the Saudi-led coalition forced the facility to shut down its ordinary air travel. The opening takes place 6 weeks behind the schedule after a UN brokered ceasefire was enforced in early April. This is due to repeated delays by the Saudi-led coalition under different pretexts.
Today, the first civilian plane has arrived at Sana'a Airport after a closure that lasted for more than 6 years, and there is a flight that will go to Amman Airport in Jordan carrying 130 passengers. The turnout is large, and people are eager to travel through Sana'a Airport amid the exceptional circumstances and the large number of patients. We call on the United Nations and all international organizations to demand that the Saudi-led coalition stop its siege and open the airport without any restrictions.
Officials say thousands of patients are in dire need to travel abroad for treatment. Keeping the airport closed has pushed many Yemeni patients desperate to seek medical treatment abroad to the brink amid their critical health conditions.
We were not able to travel through another airport because of the difficulty of traveling by road and the rugged roads. As my health situation was critical and I couldn't take the long way to another city.
There was a deliberate delay by the Saudi-led coalition to operate flights through Sana'a's airport, especially since 41 days have passed since the implementation of the UN brokered truce. We hope that Yemeni civilians will profit from the opening of the airport, that the truce will be extended, and that the airport will continue to be operational, as it's a civilian airport that does not serve any military authority.
Under the two-month truce that was brokered by the United Nations at the beginning of April, there should be two flights from Egypt and Jordan and back there every week. However, the truce will end in 2 weeks and the terms of the armistice have not yet been implemented.
People here hope that the UN brokered truce will be extended and that Sana'a International Airport will always be open to humanitarian flights, as it is a humanitarian necessity to save the lives of thousands of patients, including children, who are waiting for the chance to travel abroad for treatment. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Christian churches in the occupied West Bank condemn an Israeli attack on the funeral of slain Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh. In a statement, representatives of 12 Christian denominations called the attack on Abu Akleh's funeral on Friday a, quote, violation of freedom of religion. They noted that the actions of Israeli forces constituted an invasion and disproportionate use of force. Separately, the Catholic Archbishop in Al-Quds slammed the regime forces for storming into a Christian health institute disrespecting the deceased and forcing the pallbearers to almost drop the coffin. Shireen Abu Akleh was working for the Al Jazeera News Network and was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid in the city of Jenin last week. Anger over her killing was compounded on Friday when Israeli forces beat mourners carrying her casket from a hospital to a church for the funeral service. Global rallies to mark the 74th anniversary of Nakba Day once again reminded the Palestinians that they are not alone in their struggle for freedom from Israeli occupation. Hashtag trending takes a closer look at the event as reflected on social media.
Hey everyone, welcome to another hashtag trending with me, Ali Reza. Global demonstrations were held on Sunday as people took to the streets to voice their support for Palestine and its people as the date marked the 74th anniversary of Nakba Day. Stay tuned to review some reactions to the story through the lens of social media. The Nakba Day, or the Day of Catastrophe, refers to May 15, 1948, when ethnic cleansing was perpetrated against the Palestinians and hundreds of thousands of them were forced out of their homes, displaced, while Israel proclaimed its illegal existence. 74 years since the beginning of Nakba, Israeli authorities continue to seize large portions of Palestinian lands in the occupied West Bank, create new settlements and expand their existing ones, and attack Palestinian residents. Here's our first tweet of the day. To it, it reads, 74 years of ethnic cleansing, of settler colonialism, of occupation, of denying us rights to return, of segmented identities, of stealing lives and property, of violence and crimes. And our next tweet by Professor Valid Amir says, the Nakba is the story of the most painful tragedy in history. It is the attempt to change geography and distort the course of history by evacuating the Palestinian people, the owners of the land, and replacing gangs, criminals, and invaders instead of them. Samer Abdennour said, 74 years ago, my father was made a refugee when his family was forced from their Jerusalem al-Quds home under Zionist militia gunfire. My mother's family was dispossessed from Nazareth. She was born a refugee. 74 years on, we are steadfast in our demand for justice and return. Hashtag Nakba 74. Meanwhile, from New York to Sydney, thousands of pro-Palestinian demonstrators rallied in different cities around the world to show their solidarity with Palestine and call for an end to the Israeli attack on the besieged Gaza Strip. Some of the favorite slogans were Free, Free Palestine and From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free. Our next tweet from Supporting Humanity reads, Anti-Zionist Jews marching in the streets of Brooklyn, New York City in solidarity with the Palestinian people to protest 74 years of Israeli occupation and apartheid. Al Jarmagh News has our next tweet. Thousands of protesters rallied in Sydney, Australia, commemorating the 74th anniversary of Nakba. Bassem has our next tweet. 170 arrests made in Berlin of individuals carrying flags or wearing anything referencing Palestine. Any two people or more found saying Free Palestine in public were considered as forming a protest and arrested. Simply, this is how Germany's Nazi past is being dealt with. And still to this day, Palestinians continue the resistance against the Israeli occupation and its continued crimes against them. They say that they will keep on fighting until Palestine is fully liberated and that all Palestinian refugees can return to their homes. Our final batch of comments start with a tweet by Hadi Nasrallah. Al Jazeera journalist, these are the owners of the house. How do you feel about living in a house built on the rubble of their old home? Israeli settler, I honestly don't feel anything. I'm very happy. Living here is amusing. The Nakba in one picture. Nora Boros Friedman has our next tweet. Israeli apartheid will be dismantled. Palestinians will return. We are one day closer to the day when Palestine is finally liberated from the colonial nightmare, from the river to the sea. Hashtag Nakba 24. and hashtag Nakba Day. About Palestine, too, has our final tweet. The keys that Palestinians taken with them were proof that their land had been stolen. They became a powerful symbol passed down as heirlooms of both the horror of the Nakba and also the enduring Palestinian determination to one day return to their homes. Hashtag Nakba Day. Well, that's been it for another hashtag trending.
People in the U.S. city of Buffalo hold a vigil to mourn 10 people shot and killed by an alleged white supremacist teenager. The gunman also wounded three in what authorities call an act of racially motivated violent extremism. Nearly a dozen of those hit by gunfire in a supermarket on Saturday were black. Police are now investigating the crime. They say 18-year-old Peyton Jardin, now in custody, was live-streaming his carnage. The city's mayor says that the killer expresses his purpose to take as many black lives as possible. He has been charged with first-degree murder. In another act of gun violence in California, a shooting at a church left one person dead and five others injured on Sunday. Officials say four of those injured are in critical condition. North Korea has mobilized the army to help with the distribution of drugs as the country reports more deaths and infections from a fever of unidentified origin. More than a million people have been ill with what Pyongyang refers to as a fever, despite acknowledging first COVID death. Leader Kim Jong-un has blamed the procurement of medicine for cases and saying that drugs are not delivered in timely in accurate manner. He has also criticized irresponsible work attitudes as well as the performance of the cabinet and the public health sector. Kim has now put himself in front and center of the disease response. The media has so far reported 50 deaths from the fever, while over 500,000 people are currently under treatment. Kim has called the outbreak the biggest turmoil the republic has experienced since its foundation. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Well, let me add some verjuice. Very sour. This stew shouldn't be that sour. What can I do now? I'd better not to add the dried lime to the stew. Oh, what a mixture would it turn out to be? Well, today I have two guests, and I'm cooking for them. This is gourmet sabzi, one of the most delicious and popular meals in Iran. And in the evening, I'm going to take my guests to one of the delicious streets of Tehran, to Sietiri Street, the center of street foods. Sietiri Street is located at District 12. This street is one of the oldest streets of Tehran. The most important monuments of this street include the National Museum of Iran, St. Peter's Church, Obgine Museum, Tehran Industrial Vocational School, Iranian National Museum of Science and Technology, and Hayyim Synagogue. Since past times, Sietiri Street has been known as a tourist attraction site of Tehran. Most of the historical sites of Tehran, which have been registered by the heritage sites, are located in this street. Due to the existence of a hospital in this street, Sietir used to be known as Marizkhane Street, literally Hospital Street. This old hospital is still standing tall, but its name has changed to Sina Hospital. I am now at the beginning of Sietiri Street. Here, so crowded. Sietiri Street is the center of street foods in Tehran. Just beside me, there is a stand which has a really big brass samovar. This stand sells fragrant Iranian tea with different flavors, with rose, cardamom, and cinnamon. I have bought a cup of cinnamon tea. I love this flavor. Still hot. I have to wait a bit more. This stand sells ice cream and cold Iranian sharbats. Sharbat sekanjabin, which is one of the oldest Iranian drinks made of honey and vinegar. Well, sour cherry sharbat and khakeshir sharbat, which are all among the most popular drinks in Iran. Oh, look at here. This stand sells different types of Iranian kebab on barbecue. Oh, what a great smell. And now let's learn about the opinion of people concerning this street.
My children had not seen this street before, so we decided to visit here and have fun.
Here's a cobblestone street, which gives the sense of old Tehran.
I suggest those tourists who come to Tehran from other countries to visit this street.
Whenever I happen to come by this part of the city, I visit this street. It's a cobblestone street.
It's spectacular. I have come here with my friends for the second time. It's an amazing place.
It's a really different experience, eating on the street and beside the people.
The weather is great here in Siatir Street, and across from me there is the National Museum of Iran.
Siatir is one of the must-see sites of Tehran. Here is full of life. The cheerful voice of people is a sign of their hope to the future in beautiful Iran. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. Economic divide.
When the Russian president announced the ruble payment for energy from all friendly countries, the U.S. said this was a sign of desperation that it would not work. 1 month into the scheme, it's paying off, and the Russian president is laughing all the way to the bank. This is the angle we'll be covering in today's edition of ED. Coming up in today's program, rubles for Russian oil and gas, well, it has paid off. The ruble has become the best performing currency for the month of March. It has recouped most of its losses, and it has rebounded from initially the drop-off. Another highlight of this program, despite EU sanctions, many countries continue to buy Russian gas, not to mention the emerging economies like China. But not Poland and Bulgaria, which Russia has cut off due to the lack of payments in rubles. And finally, we will take a look at the Western U.S. anti-Russia sanctions. The impact has been much lower with the rally in the ruble, which is hinting at de-dollarization of global trade, especially in oil and gas.
Tensions between the West and Russia are escalating. The U.S. and its allies have imposed a variety of sanctions on Russia over the crisis in Ukraine. They were aimed at weakening Russia's economy and its currency, the ruble. The ruble was down 40% at 139 rubles to the dollar in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The sanctions have harmed Russia's economy. The Russian economy is expected to contract by 8.8% this year. Some conservative estimates see a possible decline of 12.4%. Core inflation rate in Russia is expected to stand at 20.7% this year and at more than 6% in 2023. But Russia has introduced a raft of measures to counter the sanctions and to stabilize its currency. It has strengthened against both the euro and the U.S. dollar. But more importantly, Russia has managed to play the strategic card of its huge energy resources. Russia is the world's top energy producer, and Western nations have been reluctant to put sanctions on Russia's energy sector. Russia's March oil export earnings will total $12.3 billion, up sharply on March 2021, as energy prices soar. The sanctions are designed to restrict Russia's ability to acquire foreign currency, but several European countries continue to buy Russian gas because they have become so dependent on it. Russia has introduced a measure that requires payment for gas supplies in rubles. Under the ruble-based mechanism, gas buyers are required to set up ruble accounts with Gazprom Bank. They are allowed to make payments in their currency of choice, but their payments will be converted into rubles to reach the gas provider through this account.
We discovered that Europe has extremely large inflation, extremely expensive fuel, deficit of food, and now Russia discovers that it has actually extremely powerful tools to influence the Western economy. We were told that we can use this energy as a weapon against the West.
When it comes to the ruble, you can't say that you're not surprised at how well it is doing, at least up to this point. But will it hold ground? And is this the way to go for other countries who have a weak currency? Well, let's see what people have to say about this online. Now, when it comes to the ruble, this first post said that Russia's ruble is now the strongest against the euro since March 2020. So how are those sanctions working out, Wonderland? This one is from Al Arabiya English that said Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, is discussing with officials the idea of pegging the ruble to gold and other goods, according to the Kremlin. And these are the reasons cited in its entry, where it said pegging the ruble to gold and other goods are being discussed. Linking the ruble to bullion could give Russia more sovereignty over its financial system. And it went on to say that Russia produces around 10% of the gold mined globally each year, so it can make a difference there. And here are a couple of viewer comments. The first post said, ruble is backed by gold. The U.S. dollar is backed by printer ink. Not too difficult to understand. The next post is more detailed. It said, of course, the ruble will become stronger against the euro and the dollar, because there is now a demand for rubles in order to buy Russian gas. I suspect that Russian oil to Western states will soon require rubles to buy that too. Moreover, with the growing use of the SWIFT alternatives and the non-Western-controlled financial alternatives that China, India, Russia, and Iran now have operating, I doubt that the dollar will be the global reserve currency for much longer. Well, those are some of the online tweets there. Let's find out what our guests think for our first segment of the Q&A. We have Andrew Korypko, who's a Moscow-based political analyst who joins us from Moscow. Andrew Korypko, welcome to Economic Divide. Russia has said that it wants European countries to buy its natural gas in rubles, not dollars or euros. The Russian ruble, a real dramatic recovery, to say the least, recovery so strong that has made it the world's top-performing currency for the month of March. How do you think Russia was able to pull this off?
Situation with the ruble has actually been very impressive and caught quite a lot of observers by surprise. They expected the ruble to tank and turn into so-called rubble, but that hasn't happened. And one of the largest and most important reasons for that is President Putin's decree at the end of March demanding that payment for gas by so-called newly designated unfriendly countries be made in rubles. Now, how is this supposed to work? Well, it's actually rather simple. Because of the U.S.-led West unilateral sanctions against Russia, it's very difficult for them to pay directly with rubles. So in order to facilitate that among those countries that, of course, want to still receive Russian gas, and most of them do, even if they say they don't, what they're going to have to do is open up an account in Gazprom Bank. Gazprom Bank, as the name implies, is the bank associated with the Russian gas company Gazprom. And they'll deposit their euros or dollars, and then the bank itself will convert that foreign currency into rubles, and from those rubles they can purchase gas. So that's essentially how it's supposed to work. Now, again, there are some countries that are reluctant to do so. They're using the pretext of so-called rule of law, which again is a subjectively defined standard imposed by the West in pursuit of its own interest with respect to these illegal and unilateral sanctions, to justify not doing it. They say, oh, it's a breach of contract. But at the end of the day, I mean, if they need this gas, they're going to have to do what President Putin has requested. Now, why won't some of them do it? Well, they're clearly under American influence, and they're basically sacrificing their own objective national interest because of it. So we'll see exactly what they do, but thus far, this proposal, or rather demand by President Putin, has really given the ruble a major boost. It's been very, very important for the Russian currency.
Okay, let's bring in Malik Ayub Sumbal. He's a senior journalist and author and independent geopolitical analyst who joins us from Singapore. Malik Ayub Sumbal, welcome. Looking at the ruble, obviously a great comeback, to say the least, becoming a very valuable performing currency. But when you take a look at the actual scheme, the countries are dependent on Russian gas. That's become very obvious. Why do you think this scheme worked and countries are so dependent, like European countries, therefore buying Russian gas, which has led to a higher demand for the ruble?
No, of course, that could be, that could not, we can say that that could be a very immediate and very, very immediate relief to the Russian, Russian ruble and the Russian financial crisis. It could boost and it could give the encouragement into the local market and the investors. And of course, it will definitely strengthen the rubles against the other currencies. So this step is actually one of the steps that could be, that the European have, that the European has the Eurozone has a very strong monopoly of the euro currency. So in that case, even we see that a lot of the European leaders have been criticizing by the other European countries that this country and that country is going to pay in the rubles.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program, where economic news from around the world is reviewed, then chosen for this segment. Our first piece of news covers the impact of U.S. sanctions. Now, what has occurred is a coalition of two dozen countries have united and then have said that U.S. sanctions are harming people worldwide. They further criticized how U.S. policies have hurt civilian populations in what amounts to, and this is a harsh description that they have given, to collective punishment. That's how they have described U.S. sanctions. On to recession in the U.S. The possibility of it is very real now. We have warned about this in one of our previous programs. Well, this is what has happened. The U.S. economy shrank 1.4% in the first 3 months of 2022. And when this happened, most economists have agreed then that a recession is inevitable. Time will tell whether that is true or not. And it seems like all the directions are pointing to that. Moving on to Africa, food insecurity is our next topic for that continent, which cannot sustain prolonged inflation. I mean, who can these days? But the IMF has issued a warning that rises will actually stoke the risk of unrest in Africa. It cited the Ukraine conflict as the leading cause of food insecurity across parts of Africa. So Africa obviously is going to be one of our major focuses in the next few weeks. And finally, a look at world growth. World growth is slowing to a crawl as the Ukraine conflict and COVID grip the biggest economies. It is said that the U.S., EU, and China have actually struggled to maintain momentum and will therefore prevent world growth. Those were the topics that we chose for this segment.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Hello and welcome to our in-depth section where we will look at how the Russian ruble is going to give the U.S. a heavyweight punch, decreasing the standing of the U.S. dollar. So let's go to round one. Now, the Russian Central Bank, it has pegged 1 gram of gold to 5,000 rubles, or $50. At the same time, as you're well aware, as it states there, Putin has made the order that Russian gas needs to be purchased only in rubles. Okay, so that much we do know. Now, based on that, this means that Putin basically has just pegged Russian oil and gas to gold, using the ruble as a proxy, so to speak. Now, this also means that Europe will need to either buy rubles from a Russian non-sanctioned bank in order to buy oil and gas, or they will have to buy directly in gold, which means there's going to be a lot more demand for rubles. Now, we need to take a look at the foreign exchange rate, or Forex. Currently, Forex for rubles to dollars, that's about 100 to 1. So that's where that stands. But with 5,000 rubles now equaling 1 gram of gold and oil being priced directly in gold, well, there's going to be a massive price disruption in these Forex markets in terms of how much gold a dollar can actually still buy. So that's another point that needs to be highlighted here. Now, this is where the U.S. should really, really be worried. Foreign countries holding U.S. dollar reserves or debt notes, well, they're going to see a less use for them, and they're going to start dumping them in order to get something that will hold its value. Basically, now any currency that's pegged to the gold will fit that bill, which means countries will opt to go for the ruble because of that. So there you can see how the ruble has actually not only retained its value, but it has increased in what it's worth. Ultimately, all those excess dollars being dumped by nations, guess what's going to happen? They are all going to make their way back to the United States. And as a result, that will cause an even worse hyperinflation than what Americans are experiencing today. And finally, to top this, if you find all of this hard to believe, maybe you don't understand the way that we're approaching this, then this should be an eye-opener for many of you. Israel has started dumping the dollar, favoring the yuan in this case, to add to its reserves because it sees the dollar as a liability. Believe it or not, U.S. is probably number one ally doing that. All right, rejoining us for this segment, we have Malik Ayub Sumbal, a senior journalist and author and independent geopolitical analyst who rejoins us from Singapore. All right, Malik Ayub Sumbal, welcome back. The Russian ruble, we know that it has staged a dramatic recovery. That much has been covered so far. It's surprising the amount of recovery that it has made, the ruble being now the world's top-performing currency. How was it able to make this scheme actually work in the way that Putin approached it, do you think?
Yeah, thank you very much. So I think that the Europe is trapped into this energy situation, and the demand of the Russia to pay in the rubles is, I think, that is justifiable, because Europe needs the Russian gas, and they want to pay into the Western currencies like euro and into the dollar. So this is actually the I can say that one of the pro-Russia acts by the Vladimir Putin, that the Western countries who need the Russian gas and oil, they should pay in rubles. So I think that this is one of the best step to counter and to cater the monopoly of the international and the Western currencies like Eurozone and the like the dollars.
All right, let's see what Andrew Korypko thinks. He rejoins us. He's a Moscow-based political analyst and rejoins us from Moscow. Andrew Korypko, welcome back. We're looking at all of this happening in terms of the ruble, the backdrop of sanctions that have been applied to Russia, unbelievable sanctions. Number one is what Russia now holds in terms of the country most sanctioned. What does this say about how other countries that are under sanctions, I mean, can they adopt the same scheme as Russia did if, of course, they had the right resource that would be in demand?
Well, I think that the lesson is actually that other countries can learn, other energy-producing countries and resource-rich countries can learn from Russia's example by demanding payment for their resources in the national currency. Why is this so pragmatic? Well, obviously the market dominates. If you need the resource, you're going to pay for it if you really need it. I mean, at the end of the day, that's just how it works. So we have these countries that are sanctioned and they have energy, like Iran, for example, and they're just, you know, their economy is having difficulty. The currency is under attack, under hybrid warfare attack, mind you. So what is a great way to kind of help support your currency, which in turn helps boost domestic stability all around in a comprehensive way? Well, you can follow the Russian lead by demanding payment for your resources in the national currency. And I think that's a very smart and pragmatic workaround. And I'm not so sure the U.S. even has a solution for it. I mean, like I was explaining earlier, the U.S. can demand that these countries stop purchasing energy. But, I mean, what's going to happen to their factories? How is Germany going to continue being Europe's economic powerhouse, the whole core of the bloc's economic development, if it can't even run its factories, if the factories stop, if they go kaput because they don't have any gas?
Russia has used other tools to stabilize its currency and to prop up the ruble. Moscow has issued a decree ordering businesses that 80% of any money that those businesses make overseas has to be swapped into rubles. The order to convert 80% of those revenues into rubles creates significant demand for the Russian currency, thus helping it to be propped up. The Kremlin also issued an edict banning Russian brokers from selling securities owned by foreigners. By banning those sales, the government is shoring up both the stock and bond markets. It will also help keep money inside the country. Russia has also introduced a measure that prevents its citizens from transferring money abroad. This will serve to keep foreign currency in the country and discourage Russians from selling rubles for dollars or euros, which would put pressure on the currency. Russia is also developing a project to create a two-loop monetary and financial system in the country. The project involves the provision of the Russian currency with both gold and a range of goods representing a currency value.
Экономики. У нас достаточно внимательно смотрят на переговоры Китая и Саудовской Аравии относительно перехода на юани в торговлю нефтью. Также Россия начала переговоры с Индией о расчетах по системе рубль-рупия, национальная валюта Индии за энергоносители. То есть здесь процесс постепенно начинает набирать обороты.
Russia says to ensure the sovereignty of any national financial system, it is necessary that its means of payment have intrinsic value and price stability and is not tied to the dollar. Another important condition for the Russian economic security is the restructuring of its economy based on modern technologies.
And the request from the Russian side to pay in rubles is a unilateral decision and not according to the contracts. Companies with such contracts should not accede to the Russian demands. This would be a breach of the sanctions, so a high risk for the companies.
And Russia's ruble scheme has worked. Several European countries continue to buy Russian gas because they have become so dependent on it, because there are not alternative suppliers to meet demand. One of those countries is Germany. And based on its needs, it has refused to stop buying Russian gas altogether. Instead, it has announced that it will reduce Russian gas imports in phases. This plan shows that during this phased approach, the war will come to an end, which then may lead to Germany then resuming their imports since alternative sources are not viable. And Russia is not kidding when it comes to stopping gas supplies. It has stopped the flow of gas to Bulgaria and Poland, who refuse to pay Russian gas in rubles, in a warning to other countries that don't comply with the Russian demand.
What the world is witnessing right now because of the Russian war is truly incredible, and it's unfolding right in front of our eyes. Let me explain. When it comes to buying Russian gas, as you are well aware, there are certain countries that have refused Putin's demand to pay in rubles. This includes the G7 countries, which include the US and its allies, and the European Union, which gets 40% of its natural gas from Russia. And as you can see, they're all suffering from energy shortages. Here's another well-known fact when it comes to what the war has done to energy supplies. The International Energy Agency, IEA, said the sanctions on Russia will lead to a global energy crisis. Given Russia's role in the global energy system, this humanitarian crisis could be followed by an energy one, said Fatih Birol, head of the IEA. But here's what many don't realize that has happened as a result of this war, something we have tried to explain in this program, especially in our in-depth system, and that is a new global monetary order. Former Federal Reserve and U.S. Treasury Department official and now Credit Suisse short-term rate strategist Zoltan Pozsar has said that the sanctions on Russia could lead to a new global monetary order. He said, "We're witnessing the birth of Bretton Woods III, a new world order centered around commodity-based currencies in the East and will likely weaken the euro-dollar system and also contribute to inflationary forces in the West." And before I leave you, here's another cause for alarm, which is a distinct possibility. The day the G7 nations seized Russia's foreign exchange reserves following the latter's attack on Ukraine, that marked the end of the current monetary regime. This is where China comes in. It is faced with two alternatives to protect its interests: either sell treasury bonds to buy Russian commodities or do its own quantitative easing, that is, print renminbi to buy Russian commodities. Pozsar expects both scenarios mean a higher yield and higher inflation in the West. And that does it for my part of the program. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did and if you didn't, let me know why either way. Contact info is on your screens now.
In the past years, we have covered the topic of the dollar on numerous occasions, along with U.S. sanctions and U.S. foreign policies that have had negative economic impacts on a variety of countries in one form or another. This time, the U.S. is inflicting economic pain on itself by getting involved in the Ukraine conflict with the aim of defeating Russia and weakening it militarily. Inflation, hyperinflation, GDP contraction, high energy costs, sounds like the whole world is involved in this conflict. Isn't it time to put a stop to this? Russia's strategy, however, has worked, and its gas and energy is still being bought. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. For me, Kavita Hui, and the whole team is goodbye. Until next time.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies: 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.